This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Well, I have to start this episode a little bit angry because the co-host of mine, before we went live on air, said something to me that he knows I don't like.
I triggered him.
He triggered me. So, yeah, all of the angry things that I say on this episode, you can blame the old man over there.
Fault, Steve. I like the term
well-aged. I'm not going to tell you welcome.
I'm not old. I'm well-aged.
But I will say welcome to our guests tonight. They have a very successful podcast. You can find the link to it in the description below. But let's say hello to Matt and Philip from What the If. Hello,
hey gentlemen. Guys,
howdy.
Hey,
we're glad that you're joining us to go through some flat Earth stuff and try to see what would happen if the world was actually flat. So we'll get to that in just a second. First, as always, let's go through what we've got coming up for the week. Tomorrow is going to be the rescheduled debate between Red's Rhetoric, Godless Engineer, the Limitless Channel, and Awake Souls. They will be the guys from the Limitless Channel and Awake Souls have declared that they have a working model of the flat Earth.
Whoa.
Yes. If any of you guys remember, we had a debate last Friday between Red's and Jaronism. Jaronism said he had a flat Earth model that worked. He did not have one at all, actually. He just wanted to try to discredit the globe. So these guys got in contact with us, said that they had a working model that they wanted to debut, and we're going to give them that shot tomorrow. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern, so join us for that. Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, we have Cosmic Skeptic and Dr. Alex Malpass. Cosmic Skeptic had two videos recently about objective morality, and Alex Malpass will be here to kind of question that and see if we can't do you think we can come to an agreement, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a big fan of Cosmic Skeptic, don't get me wrong, but everybody that I've talked to thinks he's made some major flaws in his arguments, and they've actually talked to him about it, but he hasn't willing to really change his position yet. So I mean, I think it's gonna be a great discussion. I'm really looking forward to it, but I don't think it's going to make any headway with Cosmic for some reason. By the way, unlike Jaronism, I brought a model today. So
mm-hmm. See, now if you hadn't called me a discount gnome, I would have laughed at that probably.
Not even a chuckle.
In the 3D glasses I'm wearing, that model is strikingly real.
It's legit, right?
Yeah. I can touch it.
We've got probably some flat earthers watching that you're encouraging. They're probably okay. Like, see?
Look at Steve, sell out.
You guys agreeing with us now.
You know what? Jaronism, I can't pronounce his name anymore. It's been so long. Jaronism has made some good arguments. So he's finally started to convince me that the earth is flat. So this is my extended to madness.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe you should watch his video from yesterday before you start agreeing with.
It'll change my mind back to a normal analysis. Okay.
And then Friday we have V from Theomaki. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's going to be talking about Islam and their creation story a little bit, and why that is a potentially bad thing for the country. Next week, we have Vadim Nyquist and Bunty King on Wednesday. And then Adam Kolkesh, who is running for president 2020 on the Libertarian Party. He'll be here to try to convince Steve and I why we should vote Libertarian. Mm-hmm. That's the party of the porcupine.
Is that their mascot? Yeah. What?
Yes.
It's yes.
Interesting. Seriously, right. A porcupine. So you've got a donkey, yeah. An elephant, and a porcupine.
All right.
Sounds like the start of a bad joke, doesn't it?
Maybe they're stacked on top of each other.
I kind
of
like the porcupine. It sounds kind of cool.
It's supposed to signify like the don't touch me thing, you know, like
don't tread on
obviously. Yeah. If you try to tread on their rights, they will.
Is that three different kinds?
Yes. If you ask Dr. Hovind, absolutely.
Well, elephants can't mate with pine trees. Can they mate with porcupines? I don't know.
Ooh, you know.
Awkward.
Yeah, he doesn't mean to scare you guys. This is from a previous debate we had where we had to explain that pine trees can't produce elephants in an evolution debate.
I was confused on that for some reason.
We've had some crazy debates on here, as you can tell.
Yeah, that's a good what the if.
According to evolution, elephants can't meet with a pine tree. No
kidding. Yeah, it's. Doing this sometimes is painful. Sometimes, most of the time, it's a joy. Like we love the people who are watching and
yes,
all that. But sometimes you just have situations where you're like, why do I willingly come and listen to this? let's jump right in. And I'm going to let Matt and Philip introduce themselves and let you guys know what they do and why they do it. And then we'll jump into what happened if the Earth was flat. So whichever one of you two guys wants to kind of take it and say a little bit.
All right. I'm Matt. I was once upon a time, I worked in physics and astronomy, and then got interested in history and philosophy, got seduced by the humanists. And now I teach history and philosophy of science at NYU. I'm particularly interested in how science actually gets done as opposed to how we think it should get done or how we want it to get done, because the stories are way better when you find out what's actually happening.
That's cool. See, I think Matt is cool, and that's how I found how we created this show.
See, he's really cool.
He's really cool. Actually, I've known Matt for quite a while now, and I will say I sat in on his Carl Sagan class one summer.
Right,
that was amazing. Actually, that was really quite an experience. Going back and watching Cosmos again, watching the original Cosmos again, is quite a trip. I'd forgotten all the fashion statements.
The turtlenecks. It's all about the turtlenecks.
Which explained the old snapshots of me from the time.
I burned all mine as well. Everybody was living in the 70s. Burn them, get rid of them.
Thank you.
Unless you got hickeys, keep one.
Oh! I'm Philip Shane, and I'm a documentary filmmaker. And if I have to define myself, you know, I actually started out in science. I'm a woefully lapsed scientist when I was much younger. Like I grew up loving cosmos and science and especially physics and astronomy and also engineering a bit. When I was 16, I won a contest with a group I created in my high school. NASA held a contest for kids to submit ideas for an experiment that would fly on the shuttle, on the space shuttle. And we won this thing. And so I then wound up in high school, you get to intern, somewhere in your junior year. So I ended up being an intern at the Goddard Space Center in Maryland, where I was growing up. And then went to University of Maryland and I was studying engineering. Wow. Physics. And so I was like, it was cool because I was on the outside and the inside of these different things. I could talk more about, I was at NASA probably for about 4 years, I think, again, as a lowly intern, but I saw a lot of really cool stuff. But I also enjoyed the arts and theater. And I found by going into film and eventually actually into documentaries that I could find this interesting place between science and the arts, because it's like, documentary, I'm learning things just like you would in science. But now humans are my subjects. And I found I had a lot more power. And didn't have to deal with the math, which I confess I am embarrassed. I just, that is one of the things that stopped me. But I love the computers and stuff. Anyway, long story short, ended up making a lot of documentaries, and I've worked mostly as an editor originally. I worked on a lot of interesting projects, both cinema verite style, as they call it, and more historical or interview-based. I got to work on, related to this show, I got to work on a show with Peter Jennings at ABC News called, a two-hour documentary called UFOs, Seeing is Believing. And that was also a National Geographic thing. So that's, I learned a ton from that about the soft science, pseudoscience. Mm-hmm. Met a lot of people there too, which was quite interesting. Years later, I ended up directing a documentary about Einstein. And Matt was one of the people I found who had done some research and could speak amazingly in that particular case, because Matt has studied both science and religion. What was the title of your book about Eddington?
Practical Mystic.
Practical Mystic. It was a wonderful book about Arthur Eddington, who was the astronomer who was the first to confirm Einstein's theory of general relativity by taking photographs of how stars appeared to change position in the sky because of the curvature of space-time around the sun. He was also a Quaker and conscientious objector to World War I. Anyway, amazing, amazing story. Found Matt. We became friends throughout that process. In fact, here's a funny story that I think you remember this, Matt, right? That the day we did interviews in Los Angeles and in New York. And
oh, so yes.
We flew, if people were not native to either of those cities, we would fly them to one of those places and we would interview there. And you were you in Illinois at the time?
Michigan.
Okay. In the Midwest. And so we flew him to New York, put him in the New York batch. And we were all set up. We were doing interviews. I interviewed Michio Kaku and Neil Tyson. And I mean, it was just fantastic. And a lot of other authors. And so Matt came in for his interview day and sat down and said, you had just literally just walked from getting hired at NYU.
That's right. It was a good day.
Yeah. So that was a profitable, and it was paid for by Left Right, mm-hmm. by History Channel.
That's right.
You're busy.
Damn. I'm like super jealous right now. You literally just described and named it all. Yeah. I think it's, you know what though? I'm so glad that we came into contact with each other though, because I listened to several of your episodes and I think you're a perfect match for this show in terms of basically about what you just said, you just summed up, because the things that you guys cover, the space aspect, religion, and the fact that you did interning at NASA, you have just triggered so many flat earthers that are watching.
All
because,
right.
That means that you are a certified shill. You are one of the the CGI Illuminati.
Is it a dream come true?
We got one more dislike when you said
I do have the hair, the aliens. Yeah.
So every time Philip says NASA, we get one dislike. I don't know if there's a correlation there. But
coincidence?
Correlation? Who knows?
You've made it. Neil deGrasse Tyson, be called a shield. You've made it. This is a pinnacle day for you.
Fantastic. Well, I must say, when I worked on, I was an editor, not a producer, but some of my friends who were producers on that UFO show probably to this day still get nasty, you know, emails or comments on Reddit, things like that. For basically, we investigated, you know, UFOs, and we had explanations, which was not a good thing. So,
oh, you didn't get to meet any aliens?
Oh, I did. I would have sworn they were aliens. They were human.
We know what you mean by that. We have a video that is actually the first video that we did for YouTube, like the first actual. We had a podcast before, and then the first actual video that we did for YouTube, it was a debate. It was the first thing that we did, and it's been probably nearly 200 videos later, and that still gets like 15 comments a day calling Steve and I. We're paid by NASA. We're shields. We're part of the Illuminati.
Yeah.
There's no curvature on that video. I mean, it's wild how people will not let a grudge go. I mean, never.
Yeah. Although some of the nicest people I've met, you know, I went to some of the conventions and stuff, and it's a different thing, obviously, when you meet people face to face.
Yeah.
I mean, they're normal people for the most part in real life.
They claim to be.
Yeah.
Well, they're as normal as any of us.
Who knows?
I've discovered there's a range of normal. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're normal, but wishful thinking is something they all have in common. Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever you call what do you call that? Magical thinking. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So we're going to talk about if the Earth was flat tonight. You kind of want to start us off by what would change or what would need to happen if that was the case?
Yeah.
Yes. What the if the Earth were flat? And by the way, this is a way speaking of meeting the people and saying that they're nice and enjoying meeting them, is I do find it actually genuinely educational to, this is sort of what we do on the show, sort of take an idea and say, well, before we throw it away, let's go with that. But it's the one rule we have for ourselves on what the if is, we allow ourselves one big weird thing. So we say the Earth is flat, that's fine. Everything else, we try to stick to known science. So the shill allows us to do take one pill, half a pill.
So this is sometimes a challenge. Yeah.
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 So Matt, awesome. take us. Let's all get together.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna, you know, like a Disney ride. We're gonna sit in the car, like it's Space Mountain. So each of us one after the other, no seatbelts, but we do have that bar comes down. Put your phone in the little pouch and your glasses and whatever, and off we go. Matt's in the front car. What do we see?
I'm scared.
as well, you should be. One of the things we need to start out fairly quick is exactly what we mean by flat, right? Because that can mean a bunch of different things, right? Because usually when people say, I think the Earth is flat, what they really mean is, I think it's not round. And that's not actually all that helpful, right? So when you say it's flat, like, what do you mean? Does it have an extent? Is it like a bottle cap or like a piece of paper? You know, behind Steve, we can see a square version of the flat Earth, right? I find most flat Earths tend to be round, if you'll pardon that confusion for a moment. And then they have some thickness. So they're like a millstone or a,
hockey puck. What do
you call those? Pies? Kind of like a pie, right? Mm-hmm. So it's got some thickness, mm-hmm. and we happen to live on the top of that, right? And I think the big distinction we need to draw is between that kind of thing and an infinite plane where the Earth just goes on and on and on forever, right?
Which is a pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool, right?
Yeah. So before we go to the other ideas,
yeah,
that one, when we talked about this on our show, just it's fun to stop at this one image for a second. Imagine the Earth mm-hmm. is flat and goes on infinitely in all directions. Then the sun definitely, again, we can't change, we have to keep everything else as real as possible. Mm-hmm. And flat earthers would agree that the sun does whatever the explanation is, it comes up and it, you know, goes overhead and then goes down every day. Sun goes overhead. So the sun would have to be coming up through a hole in that infinite plane.
And then down through another hole.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, so let's kind of envision this. So there's either it's an infinite plane mm-hmm. or it's a finite plane. Okay, I have a finite plane here.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So if the sun went below the horizon, at some point on an infinite plane, it would have to, because there's some kind of hole for it to go
through. It would have to go right through the surface.
Yeah. And if it's a finite, then it can come somehow go.
It can go around.
Around it.
Right. Yeah.
Or can it possibly ever stay on top and just go around the Tropic of Cancer or Capricorn?
So it's an interesting thought, right? So how could, is there any way you could reproduce the motion of the sun that we see with an infinite flat plane? And I don't think so, unfortunately.
Right. And well, because that means
the hole itself actually has to move as well, because the sun, you know, based on how the sun changes position, you know, it moves across the sky. So the hole would have to move with it.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
It would have two holes, one where it comes up and one comes when it comes to, you know,
It'd be a groove, actually, like a long, like a...
yeah, like a cutout. Right. Maybe that's what it is.
Oh, that could be yeah, like an art cutout or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'd be such a cool place to visit. The cool thing is that you could go visit this.
It'd be amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that far from hole to hole.
Come to the sun hole.
Yes. So you pack the family in the station wagon.
Yeah.
And you drive to the sun hole, and you get to watch the sunset, literally, right? It literally sinks through the surface of the earth and goes, I guess, to the other side for a little while.
Yeah.
That would
be cool. And that's why it's only like 3 miles across at that point.
Yeah.
It would have to be.
Yeah, the sun. And then also, by the way, this is how scientists in that world probably would be the first and easiest way to figure out how thick is the planet, because they could look through the
go to the hole and look down. Yeah. Yeah.
That is true.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have some kind of thickness, obviously, right? I mean, the model that I have here has obviously a little bit of thickness to it. Mm-hmm. As we drill down, there's a component on the X, so we know there's a certain point. Now, on a what if situation, if there was an infinite plane, though, what's like on the other side? I mean, is there still more universe?
Right.
Well, that's an interesting question. And it's not, I think you've probably got a few possible choices there. So there could be a whole other mirror Earth surface. Like there's Australia on the other side. And they all live perfectly normally, in the same way we do. They just happen to see the sun out of phase with us.
Well, we know that's not true, because Australia, they get paid by Britain to just pretend that they exist.
That is a true news story. That is not that is the thing that it was in the Guardian, I believe.
Wow.
That Britain sent a cargo load full of prisoners to the island of Australia. That capsized and drowned them all. So to cover up the fact that they lost all of those men, they then started paying people to tell everybody they come from Australia, to fake the accent and all that. So that's how flat earthers get around. Well, what about Australia being on the other side of the planet? And that is a scarily true story.
That's Red Eye, we figured it out, man. We know that accent ain't real, brother.
And really, things like the platypus are just too absurd to actually exist. So it would explain a lot.
That is almost too absurd to exist. Now, that's a true story.
So the infinite Earth has this weird feature where it's got to have these grooves that the sun can move through, and I should say presumably also the moon and the stars need to have that as well, because they rise and set every day.
So each star needs a groove.
Well, that's a good question. I would say yes. Would want a separate groove for each one.
If it's an infinite plane, then
And that'd be fun.
Kind of wish this really did exist. That sounds cool as hell.
My mind doesn't wrap around this amount of complexity, but I'm working on it.
So it would be weird, but I don't know, plausible? What's the right word?
So we get now. I could, if we come back a little bit now, having explored that thing. It is fun to say, basically. If what we're doing is we find this middle ground between what the flat earthers, what conspiracy theorists or flat earthers are saying, and real science. So in other words, it's, we kind of have to reverse engineer what's going on to allow the earth to appear to allow the earth to be flat,
right?
But to appear round, you know, to appear as it is,
right?
So then that takes us to more of a finite disk, right?
Yeah, right. It's hard to make the infinite plane work, but the finite disk has a lot more possibilities. So the sun and the stars and the moon can just go around the disk, right? So that replicates what we see in the sky, just convenient.
So we're like a spinning coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one of the strangest things we discovered once in running this simulation was the gravity. Matt, the gravity you described is something I'd never thought about. Now, actually, you guys could probably tell me whether this has come up in other...
Because if the only thing we're changing is the shape of the Earth, then we'll assume Newtonian gravity still holds. So mass attracts mass, right? So right now, all of us are sitting on a spherical Earth. And what we perceive as gravity pulling us down is just that that's where the center of mass for the whole Earth is, right? Every particle of matter on the Earth is pulling on you, and that averages out to what we perceive as down. And that's why people in Australia also feel down, because they're also being pulled towards the center of the Earth. So, fine. On a flat Earth, a disc-type Earth, this is a little more complicated, because the Earth, because the matter that's pulling on you is not distributed in that nice sphere.
Right, it's spread out.
Right. So if you're standing in the middle of the disc, things aren't too weird, because there's matter underneath you, so that pulls you down, and there's matter off to the right, and there's matter off to the left, but they're pretty much equals out. So right in the middle of the disc, it would look like, you would feel like what you're feeling right now. Mm-hmm. But if I go to the edge of the disc, say to the right edge of it, now I've got some matter underneath me, so I've got some pull downwards, but most of the disc is off to my left.
Yes.
So that's the direction that gravity is going to be pulling from, not down, as it were, not towards the filling of the pie, but rather towards the geometric center of the pie. So as you walk towards the edge of a flat Earth, the direction of gravity is going to gradually change until it's essentially pulling along the surface.
Right. It'd be kind of like walking uphill.
Exactly. That's right. But there's no perceivable hill, right? Yeah. Just as you walk.
It get more difficult as you get closer, though. Your gravity is going to be more, you're going to feel more effect as you go toward the edge, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's right. It'll get weirder and weirder as you go.
So trees on this planet grow, if we figure that trees always grow perpendicular to the force of gravity, otherwise they fall over.
Mm-hmm. So this is God. Wouldn't the edge, like once you got to the edge of this thing, you'd be like hanging off the edge of a cliff.
Well, once you got over the edge,
off the edge, and then you'd be like standing straight up.
You
couldn't fall off. You would still be on the edge. You'd still be
gravity will still hold you on.
Yeah, gravity will still be
right. But it would be a relief to go over that 90-degree angle hanging towards north, you'd literally be hanging off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, you would actually experiencing true down at that point, I guess. Right? I mean,
so you guys are saying that you'd never fall off of the edge of that once you got to that point,
right? Because the gravity of the matter that the Earth is made of is still there and will still pull you towards the center of whatever it is, however it's shaped.
Okay, another note about those who say they call it flat Earth, that they believe we live on a flat Earth. That means, I guess, we don't live on the edge of flat Earth, because the edge of flat Earth is round or square, or, you know, it's it doesn't have to be flat.
Yeah.
So actually, that would lead us to the square, your rectangular flat Earth is more true to the flat Earth.
How about like this, but on the edges here, that's a curve of sorts. So it's kind of flat on the top, but kind of curvature on the outside. I don't know.
Right. Well, does it hold to Steve Jobs' principles that everything is a rounded rectangle? Are they rounded corners? Now, they probably are by erosion, but how they were formed here's another question. In fact, let's go here. We didn't get here on our show, Matt, but how would this flat Earth form?
Oh, in the first place?
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
How would the accretion disk form exactly like this?
Right.
Exactly.
Let me ask this before we move on, because it's tied into the edge real quick.
Yeah.
Would that mean that the water, because if you extend it out in a square or a disc or whatever, what about the water that would essentially be, like if you look at Steve's background,
right,
would the water fall off or just curve up and underneath?
Yeah, the water would just flow over the edge, like a perpetual waterfall, I suppose. So each corner, as it were, would be a waterfall that leads you to another waterfall back to another ocean.
Again, one of the prime tourist spots is going to be the...
Right, wouldn't that be awesome?
It'd be like the global Niagara Falls.
Yeah, wow, that would be cool.
It's funny that they, because there you have different groups of flat earthers that believe different things about the flat earth. And you have the ones that believe that the earth has a wall of ice around it, just a big Antarctic wall. And then outside of that Antarctic wall, there are a group of people that believe that it doesn't end. Some of them believe that it just ends outside of that Antarctic wall. Some of them believe that there is more to the planet that we have not explored outside of the Antarctic ice wall. Right. So
the White Walkers are out there.
Right. I think the same thing. Maybe they'll come in with their dragon, their ice dragon. And,
yeah, that'd be cool.
And swoop in.
That'd be cool.
Okay, so you're talking about how the flat plane come into existence. And I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah. Couldn't have God just used a cookie cutter mold and, you know, kind of poured it all in? And
yep, that's right. So the Jell-O? Difficulty here is that even if you come up with a good scheme for making that shape, say God's cookie cutter, which sounds great, delicious, that shape is not very stable under its own gravity. Right? This is kind of hard to explain qualitatively, just with words. But if you take a disc shape, gravity is going to pull on the far edges differently than it'll pull on the near edges. And over time, that gloms it into a spherical kind of shape. Right? So that's why most planets and moons and such are round, is that anything big enough to have a substantial gravity will eventually collapse itself. That's like the lowest energy state. Now, if you're small enough, you can avoid that fate. So like there's asteroids that are potato-shaped, and they'll probably never collapse to a sphere because they just don't have enough mass. So if we're willing to make our Earth, our flat Earth, much, much smaller than our round Earth, then we might be able to hang on to it for a while.
I've never even thought of that. That's a very good point.
Actually, how much smaller would you have to make it? I mean, considerably.
I think considerably smaller, maybe, you know, 1/10,000th the mass or something.
Yeah. This irritates me a little bit, Steve. That when you hear stuff like this, like how could you still continue to believe that the planet is anything other than a sphere? It would have to be like 1/10,000th of the size that it is now for that to even possibly work.
Well, and the key thing that Matt said is that it's as lowest of energy state. It's in a state that it wants to be for an equilibrium type in system. So to get this shape like it is now because of just gravitational forces, that cannot happen. And just as we understand gravity, because it's not the most energy efficient shape, you have to put energy in the system to make it this shape. It's not the lowest possible energy state. So flat earthers have to come up with a reason for that.
Yeah.
So well, I could say, let's... Oh, sorry. You have an idea, Matt.
I could say there's a couple solutions you can do. Yeah. One is to be a young Earth creationist. So if the Earth is only a few thousand years old, then that's not enough time for collapse. That's so that's a good solution. That's good. Another one is to put some spin on the Earth. So you spin it
really
like a top.
Spin it. Yeah.
And then the centrifugal forces can balance out the gravity.
That's going to make it more like a disc, though. How's that going to make it a cube?
Oh, that won't help with a cube. Yeah, this is only for a disc.
Or this is more like this, where there's a section of a cube. It's still
I think the rectangular flat earthers.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Most people think it's a disc, though. I would say most flat earthers think it is a round disc.
Oh, okay. All right. One thing, just to reiterate the what the if credo, like the prime directive on Star Trek, is. Again, we try to change one thing. So it is helpful because it keeps us all from spinning off into all kinds, right? There's an infinite number of possibilities as you, like, well, God or this or that. Mm-hmm. And so the fun thing is to say, okay, now let's remind ourselves we're in this universe. The Earth is 4 billion, no, there's everything else has to be the same. So the Earth is 4 billion years old. It has the life it has. Also, it is the size it is. I mean, do flat earthers think that is there a feeling about how big the Earth is? Do they think it's the same surface of our Earth, it's just flat?
They don't address that.
Yeah.
Or not that I've heard.
So
they
your
don't.
Model, your model is literally Ceteris paribus, all things being equal.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. They don't mention that. Anything that actually would go to, like, substantially defeat their argument they want to dress. Like, and it was funny because I think before you came into the call, Philip, we were telling Matt that we had one guy on here that, and I'm glad you opened with this, Matt, on the what the if here with about the flat Earth, because he literally says that gravity doesn't exist. That it's the theory of down, like that things are heavier than air, so naturally they down. And when Matt said, you know, the down part of gravity being the same as it is now, that that was perfect. It was perfectly tied in.
That's a fan of System of a Down.
Nice. I agree.
Deep cut.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at, you know, old theories of gravity, like Aristotelian Greek physics, that's essentially the word. They don't have an explanation for it. It's just a description that massive objects tend to go in a certain direction. But even the Aristotelians knew the Earth wasn't flat. And part of their argument for that was precisely this, was if I'm in Alexandria and I drop a rock, it goes in a particular direction. And then you're in Athens and you drop a rock and it goes in a particular direction. Those two rocks will eventually meet at the center of the Earth. And that was actually one of the early arguments for the Earth being round. Is that if they're all heavy things are trying to get to a certain point where they'll be happy, then that means we have to be on a spherical Earth. Otherwise, we'd see rocks going in all sorts of crazy directions.
Right. So if we didn't have the ground to stop those two rocks from meeting, they would fall straight through and hit at the center.
Yep. Hang out.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a misnomer that because we always, and I think before Matt talked about that, I mean, I think Carl Sagan may have addressed it in Cosmos at one point, but generally I felt like most people, it's like we would say, oh, back when people believed the Earth was flat, you know, like these people still believe the Earth is flat, as if it's been a continuum that people felt that way. Right. But Matt, in the Aristotelians were like the first scientists, kind of.
They well, it depends how you want to define science. Scientist. But there's they're not alone. So there's lots of civilizations that realize the surface of the Earth is curved thousands of years ago, right? 2,500 years ago or so. And it's not always, generally the rule seems to go like this. If you're a seafaring civilization, you know that the world has some curvature to it, because when you watch a boat go over the horizon, the bottom part of the boat vanishes first, and then the top, and then vice versa when it's coming back. Right. Yeah. And the easy explanation for that is just that there's curvature. So if you build boats, you figure this out pretty early, like say the Greeks and the Babylonians and the Egyptians. If you live on a landlocked area, you probably don't figure this out. So you have some flattish version of things.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. But our sort of intellectual tradition that we think of, you know, that kind of gives rise to modern science, very early on, the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Babylonians figure this out, that the Earth has some curvature. And that knowledge is never lost, right? We kind of have this cartoon image of the Dark Ages in our head when people forget everything important. But that's not true. Nobody in Europe ever forgets that the Earth is round. They know it. They have good arguments for it. They have a good size estimate for it. And that's true right up until the modern era. There is no golden era of flat earthers until now.
Well, you couldn't have. I mean, with all the civilizations being seafaring, and I was Navy, they couldn't even plot a course and get where they were going if they had assumed some kind of flat Earth situation. Right.
That would be bad.
That's really. Are there any? If you were a flat earther in the Navy,
no, that's a great question.
You'd be in trouble.
You know what? I never even heard of such a thing in my entire military career. I couldn't tell you one person that thought of flat Earth. It wasn't until I got to this kind of forum where I realized it was something that actually existed. So I've heard stories of people saying, "Oh, I was ex-Navy and I was a flat earther." If that might be the case, I have never met one in real life.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, well, that's comforting, actually. It's
way worse than don't ask, don't tell, because nowadays nobody gives a shit if you're gay. You're flat earther. They might do something about it.
Yeah.
Tell them about the teacher, Steve, your daughter's teacher at the school.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not military, but same principle. I mean, my daughter had a fourth grade teacher that was a flat earther, I just recently found out.
How is that possible?
I think, I asked the same question, and I'm glad she didn't tell me then because I would have lost my shit. But I think that we are doing our disservice to our children and our future generations by not cracking down on people in positions of education and science, people that go out, the communicators that promote flat earth and things of that nature. I think that they should not be in positions to teach anybody. I've made the argument before, if you're a flat earther or a young earth creationist, I'm sorry, you do not even get a fucking seat at the table of science. You are already outside of what is considered to be modern science. You're outside of that range. You don't get a say. That's just my position.
Logic. I mean, yeah. Actually, so taking a small break from the what the if scenario, which we'll jump back into, but I have been curious to ask, why is it? Well, I feel like it's the internet, because we're hearing about flat earth a lot, but mm-hmm. it seems like it's a pretty recent thing. But that's one question. When did it sort of become this thing? And the other is, do they genuinely believe it, or are they just sort of like having fun?
My theory is no, that they don't genuinely believe it. I think that it's a way to be in an edgy movement, that it's a kind of like a cool click. Are there some people that believe it? Probably. But I think that, based on the research that I've done into where this came from, like this big wave that surprisingly their numbers are growing, which is hard to believe, but it apparently is pretty well, agreed upon that it started out as a meme on 4chan that somebody, as a trolling, posted this long post that, oh, we're being lied to. This is why the planet is the shape that it is. Obviously, there are people out there who can't pick up on sarcasm.
Right.
Especially on 4chan. Yeah.
Yeah. 4chan, right, source of all knowledge.
People not picking up on, people not picking up on sarcasm.
Yeah, it's dark, it's dark nowadays, right?
Yeah. It's a whole other, thing. We've been involved in a controversy with that as well, but they couldn't pick up on that sarcasm and ran with it. And so it, like a domino effect, kept falling and falling and falling and falling. And then you have people who are just jaded for whatever reason and see that, well, these people get a lot of attention. You know, they have the spotlight on them. I want to be in that edgy in crowd too. And it's easy to sit around and say, you know, NASA lies and makes CGI pictures and all that other kind of stuff. But when it comes down to actually backing up their claim with scientific evidence, we've seen it out on this show, I don't know how many times, over and over and over and over again, inevitably they fail. And there's a reason for that.
Well, I must say that is quite a difference between, let's say, the general feeling of the flat earther person. It sounds like it's sort of entertainment, or in fact, they're running a thought experiment in some ways, which is, I'll give credit for that. So it could be a teachable moment, as we say. But they don't really care that, like, in other words, one sort of place to go for a little bit of evidence would be that, well, who cares the most? Like these scientists who are really like, no, you really should understand this. It's round and here's why. And why we know it's round is like amazing. Like there's so many human achievements involved in coming to, I mean, the fact that we could take a picture from the moon, right, of the earth is an astounding achievement. So, and that we knew it was round before then anyway. The difference between flat earthers and, let's say, the UFO believer community, let alone alien abduction, they experienced something. Now, a lot of flat earthers I've heard say things like, well, I don't see it, you know, and so there's that fallacy, the eyewitness belief. Mm-hmm. But people with UFOs and stuff, they've really experienced a whole lot more emotion about it. Like, they're really fervent about it.
Yeah. Well, I believe a lot of experiencers have actually experienced something. I don't think we've ever been visited by aliens. I think that probably aliens might exist in other places, but they're not coming here. They're staying far away if they know us.
Yeah, I wouldn't come here either.
Yeah, yeah, they're like quarantined. Stay away from them.
Yeah,
the quarantine.
Yeah, we're like the innocent of the universe.
Hardly blame them for that, right?
Yeah. Oh, you got that on 4chan now. I know the anus thing came from 4chan.
I don't know.
Let me tell you how bad it gets. You weren't in the with us yet, but I was telling Matt, I had a guy two nights ago, and I showed everybody the messages on our show last night. He's coming on August the 9th. He is convinced 100%. And I mean, it's immovable. I have asked him all the questions and tried to suss out if he was a troll or not, but he's serious. He's got a YouTube channel with videos on it. He does not believe that viruses exist.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. And I think to a certain degree, you know, part of the problem here is the way science gets taught at essentially all levels, is that information just gets dropped on students, but not the reasoning for that conclusion. So students get told the Earth is round, the Earth goes around the sun, can they explain how we know that or why those are good things to think? The answer is very often no. Like, I'll bet if I grabbed a PhD chemist, you know, next building over here, and said, give me evidence that the world is round, they probably couldn't do it.
Good point.
Okay.
That's a very good point.
And this bothers me on a deep level. Like with Steve, you know, so I have children and I hear them come home and say things and make conclusions. And like, you're really not, who's telling you that? There's got to be better ways to think about these sorts of things. Mm. And that's worrisome.
Yeah. Well, we just talked to Aaron Ra just yesterday about this very thing, and we all agreed on this wholeheartedly. And I've been saying this for a very long time: critical thinking skills, learning about contemporary rhetoric, how to analyze it, learning basic logic, should be taught at a grade school level.
Yeah,
there are ways of understanding these concepts where you don't have to get too deep into it. But I'm like you, and I agree that memorizing things by rote memorization is fine for certain things. Okay, we all have to go through that. There's only so much information you can be imparted as you're growing up and you're in the educational system. But rote memorization fails you when asking questions as to why. And why do you have justification for these things and for saying that you believe this or you know this? And I think that's a shortcoming we have in our educational system. And yeah. I think that that's something that needs to be addressed, of saying, okay, we really want you to learn some of these reasons. I understand sometimes they're complex reasons, and you have to take it with a grain of salt. And they'll tell you, like when I was in Nuxil, they told you sometimes, you're not going to understand this now. This is the way we're explaining to you. You'll figure it out next year. Okay, that's fine. I can get that. But at some point in time, you do address it. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. I guarantee it, and I'm planning to do something like this one of these days, a man on the street kind of thing. But I ask you, maybe 10 random people, that same question. Can you give me a justification why you think the Earth is round using evidence of something? I don't think probably any of them would be able to do so. Mm-hmm. I'd be very surprised.
Good point.
The one step that always bothers me that's missing is they don't genuinely have a desire to learn something.
Absolutely.
Right.
And they would rather, like, part of their insisting on this is like, I don't want to learn anything. So I'm going to keep you away with just rejecting you. So like you might in a class, you're like, goes hand in hand with the I don't care, I don't really care kind of thing. It's like, somewhat related to this, I got to work on a short documentary about Jim Simons, the head of the Simons Foundation, and Jim Simons in his youth was a mathematician and came up with a theorem that he made his name on this theorem in mathematics. It was important, and went on to actually become, someone said to him, he was earning a little bit of money because he was a mathematician, and a friend said, you know, you should probably invest your money. What am I, there, it's in the bank. And he said, no, you know, in the stock market. And he was like, well, I know nothing about the stock market. What am I? And they said, no, you're smart. Take a look. So he looked at it for a little bit, and like a genius might, he said, oh, I get it. And he created, I think it was called Renaissance Technologies, one of the first of the hedge funds, or whatever, the investment firms that used high mathematics, right? The quants, they call it. Right. So he kind of started that movement, and is now, I believe, the seventh richest man in the world. I think throughout his career, he supported he did a lot of philanthropy, but he's been retired for a while now. And one of the things he created was a program called Math for America. And he said he started it because he had kids in his daughter or something in first grade in a very, you know, very well-to-do school in New York. And he went there to meet the teachers. So he met the English teacher, and she was lovely, and she talked about, oh, well, this is how we teach them to read, and these are all the things, the activities we do, and so forth, and great. And she, you know, was really into her job. He went down the hall, and he met the math teacher, first grade math teacher, who giggled and said, you know, he basically said, I don't really know a lot about math. And he was sort of horrified, oh, no, as you can imagine. And he said, well, what happens, you know, if, when you try to do it? What if you, someone, what if a kid has a question about how to do something? And, you know, she said, well, that's why we have Mrs. Wilson down the hall. And he clicked for him, and he just thought, can you imagine if the English teacher had said the same thing? I don't really know how to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, shouldn't that be the first requirement if you're going to be a math teacher, is that you know a little bit about math?
Some math, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it's socially acceptable that you can be this way. You know, just like it's silly to me that anchor people, for instance, you know, how common is it for reporters talking about some technology story? Oh, I don't really know.
Well, you know, but they do, you know, kind of like for some, my stats teacher in college, he was a coach, which actually, at the time, I really didn't, you know, but I think about it now, yeah, you've got no stats.
I suppose. You
know, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he was really good at it. But at the time, I was like, why is a math teacher, why is a football coach teaching this level maths? But
makes sense.
It makes sense, actually.
If it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he know a little bit about statistics? That would be the key thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but he pissed me off because on the first test, one question was, you can do A or B. You didn't have to do both. And I did both. And I aced the entire exam. But the last page, I didn't finish because I ran out of time. And because it wasn't really clarified that you had to do both. And so I only got a B on that exam. And I was pissed. And I was like, screw this course.
I remember.
First time, if I don't get an A, I'm done.
First time I went to Las Vegas, I remember, you know, seeing all the guys who were running like the craps table. And I just thought, well, look at these, you know, kind of, frankly, these kind of meatheads. You know, they're just these guys here, you know, loping around, working here and da da da. And within 5 minutes, I realized, whoa, they are like processing so much math, running, you know, handling all the chips, mm-hmm, flying back and forth, six games happening at one. I mean, just the amount of things that they were doing. And so that's just a good example of a way to find.
That's all over the world too. I've seen a bunch of things about what goes, you know, at casinos and how those guys have to be aware of so many different variables that are, you know, trying to hit them all at one time. My attention span is not that great anyway, so I would not be able to even focus on one game, I don't think. But I think it's impressive for them.
Like
to
the payouts for each, you know, there's all these different squares on the table. If that's all you know, and you win a different amount. Literally complicated odds, 3-1, 2-1, 4, I mean, all this kind of crazy stuff. And they figure that out, and they manage, you know, people throw them tips and they're able to separate that. And,
right.
And everybody's watching, like they can't make a mistake. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think this actually, believe it or not, does tie back to the flat earth.
Yes.
And sometimes creationist problem too, which is there's different ways to know a subject like mathematics or science. And sometimes it's entirely possible to have an extraordinary grasp of the application of a subject without understanding any of the fundamentals, right? So like the guys running the blackjack table, they're amazing at their job, but if I ask them what they thought about the Gödel incompleteness theorem, which is also math,
mm-hmm,
they probably would not have a lot to say about that, and like that's okay. And right. Similarly, you don't want a professional mathematician running your craps table.
Right? Absolutely.
So this ties to something I noticed some years ago, which is that you know, creationists make their own scientific societies, right, where they sit around and talk about scientific creationism, and they were largely populated with doctors and engineers.
Huh.
And this often seemed strange because you'd think those are people who took a bunch of science classes, right?
Right.
So it's not entirely clear to me what's going on. I don't know if it's a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, or the fact that they have this highly practical applied knowledge, but they don't understand the fundamentals. But because they're good at the applied knowledge, they feel like they must understand the fundamentals. Surely they understand the basics.
There are some people that think differently. I mean, there's some people that grasp abstract concepts a lot more than concrete things. And so, you know, I have no problem with the person who has a PhD that understands things very concretely, but maybe not abstractly. I don't think a single person is really good at everything except for a few geniuses that have obviously been throughout history.
Like me.
That's right.
With obviously Kyle. I mean, his theorems are just, yeah.
I write one every day.
But yeah, so I mean, maybe that's another thing that should be part of the educational system, not just maths, but abstract reasoning and things of that nature. Matter of fact, maths, they should start earlier. I didn't even get exposed to algebra until eighth grade, and I think that hobbled me. I really wish that they would bring in that earlier. And I just had heard from my daughter's stepdad that they're no longer going to be teaching geometry in certain levels anymore. They're going to be replacing it with algebra, and I think that's a good change.
Wow.
So, but then again, it then lowers the abstract reasoning because
right.
geometry is a lot more abstract, so it's a trade-off.
The geometry, because you could draw things. It actually was one of the things that drew me in.
I can't draw.
Well, you had a ruler, so it's even better.
Dude, I can't even use a ruler. I am the most lamest draw. I can't draw a stick figure. My dad did architectural work. And,
oh, wow.
And was a brilliant drawer.
Yeah.
Me didn't inherit a single gene of that.
Well, Professor
Stick laughs at me how bad I draw stick figures.
Do you believe triangles exist?
Triangles don't exist.
Because you can't make one, yeah.
This is an ongoing feud here on the show between
the two of you. I'm right. It's not, I didn't know it was even debatable.
I can draw you one now. Triangles exist.
Not a real triangle.
No, well, I should say that's actually a profound philosophical conundrum. Because there's an important sense in which, no, there is no perfect triangle out there, right? And this is kind of what got Descartes going on his proof of God, but we can put that to the side for the moment. but this, you know, that shows the importance of, at the very least, defining your terms, right? What do you mean by triangle?
Three-sided object.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's no problem, right? I mean, I can make a three-sided object. Right now, if I want.
Yeah,
but then the mathematician will look at it and say, well, that's not really a triangle.
Yeah. Well,
not taking into account that we don't live in perfect Euclidean space.
Yeah,
I think what you're doing is encouraging a man who's having a midlife crisis.
I'm borderline into what's called Mariological nihilism, where objects don't even exist. So
Yeah, we have quite a few ongoing tips between Steve and I on things where we colors is another one.
Colors don't exist.
Okay. I'm a color. Not that colors are different for every person, which is
right. They just don't exist. They're a phenomenon. They only exist in the mind, so they don't have any existential properties. So,
color see what I deal with, guys. See what I have to deal with on a daily basis.
And he's the one that smokes pot, but I'm the deeper thinker. I don't know. Maybe I got to smoke pot. I don't know.
Medicinal.
It's all medicinal. When you deal with some of the subject matter and the individuals that we have on here, yeah. I feel like medicinal is the appropriate word for me because
I can see that actually.
So let's jump back.
You should try that. If you're in a state that doesn't, you're in North Carolina, one of the last holdouts, right? You're going to be the very last state to ever legalize marijuana. Go to a doctor and see if you get it prescribed and have them watch one of our dumpster
fires. That's what I'll do. I'll just be here, watch this, and you'll understand. So jumping back to what the if on the flat earth, is there anything else that would have to be or that would change dramatically?
Let's see here. I don't think I'd mentioned this yet. One of my favorite tricks on a flat earth is that there actually is no horizon.
Huh.
Right. So when we say there's the horizon, I can't see anything past it. The reason that horizon exists is because of the curvature of the Earth. Right. There's some part of the Earth that's on the other side of the curve that my eye can't make a straight line to. Right. But if the Earth is flat, there's no curvature getting in the way between me and anything I want to look at. So if I have a sufficiently powerful telescope, and, you know, assuming there aren't like mountains in the way or something, I should be able to see anything on the Earth.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
yeah, but there are different types of horizons, right? I mean, there's the one relative to the Earth, but you still have a horizon with respect to the universe, right?
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. There's cosmological
astronomical horizon. So that's still going from your vision out, but you're right. There'd be no... Your true horizon would be either like an infinite plane. It wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Because you just be parallel.
That'd be great. Time, so right? If you want to watch the World Cup, just get a sufficiently powerful telescope.
Yeah.
And point it at Moscow.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And you could watch, right? No problem.
When you said that, you know, trees would closer to the edge start growing back toward the center of gravity is. So mm-hmm. backward.
Right.
If you were able to see like to the edge, I guess, would you be able to see the trees actually start to kind of as they were tilted, weren't they?
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. So you'd be able to tell how close to the edge you were by how tilted the trees were.
So only at the true center would you have a pole that's orthogonal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fascinating.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That one tree, that's the tree of life then.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. Look what we've done here. This is
Flat Earth confirmed.
Flat Earth confirmed.
How in the tree of life.
How about that for an outcome you didn't expect?
That's right.
Now, I think one logical continuation of the idea, though, is that if in the universe flat Earth is a thing, okay, so we're saying that instead of spherical, or in addition to spherical things forming, flat disks can form for whatever reason. Therefore, we should see flat disks all over the. We should see flat planets,
right?
All over the
place. I was sent flat sun theory the other day.
Oh, ooh, nice!
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, no, you were not.
On my Facebook page. Yeah, flat sun theory. Yeah.
Why not? And this is, I think, that's a important thing to think about if you're a flat Earth cosmologist. Is there something special about the Earth, or is every celestial body similarly disc shaped? And if so, like, why don't we ever see any of them edge on? Strikes me as those are genuine questions to ask. You know, that's not just, you know, telling somebody they're stupid, but like, look, these are the consequences of thinking through the ideas that you're basing this claim on.
Well, it's always trying to make the Earth special, right? I mean, the Copernican principle, which we talked about with Rick Delano and Robert Sungenis, you know, they want to make the Earth special, right? So they will use all these mathematical manipulations and Galilean transformations to try to make the Earth the center of the universe, which actually mathematically works.
You can totally do.
But when I asked him, well, what excludes me from doing this to any other body? Why can't I make Jupiter this exact same thing? Mm-hmm. He fully admitted, well, you could, but the only thing that's preventing you from doing so and making the Earth separate and special is because God has decreed it to be that way.
But they also think that planets are not planets. They're lights. They think the ones that we've had on here, I'm just going by those. They when asked that question, what are stars? What are planets? They think they're lights. They're just bright lights in the sky.
Well, they think the moon is an emitter too. So,
I mean, they wouldn't. Some of them wouldn't need to explain how planets are not flat but round because they don't believe in the planet at all. They're just bright lights.
Mm-hmm. They're holes in the firmament. Yeah. Right. God's radiance or something.
Yeah. Right. When we were talking about that once, we actually did a show on Plato. We did a show where we took Plato's universe and we created a space program in it to explore it. And Matt, you mentioned that, one of the first things that would happen would be we would knock into the first crystal sphere. So that was an issue, and discover that the moon was merely a pearl set in this crystal sphere. But if we then figured out a way to drill through the sphere and get through it, that you said there was a belief in this cosmology that the stars were the souls of the dead.
Or not yet born, but yeah.
Oh, or not.
Or not yet born.
Ooh. So cool.
It's a reincarnation kind of scheme.
So every time it's a supernova, it's a, you know, the death of a star, it's the birth of a baby.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be great, right? Yeah. Oh, I don't think the population mathematics quite works out there. But
math doesn't matter when it comes
to... What would a shooting star be? What would a shooting star be?
Abortion?
Drunk driving.
Well, shooting stars are are within the atmosphere. They're not actually stars. So that helps.
Ah, true.
There we go.
Shill.
Lies, NASA lies.
Having this conversation, the possibilities, I almost wish I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it would be kind of cool to have a flat Earth and see a sun going into
sun hole.
Honestly, see the trees curve. Yeah, this is what makes me psyched when we do our take these thought experiments and do our show, because it's like you actually, in a way, start to see, just like when you really explore science, that first the thing seems really hard to learn, and you're like, but then when you learn like the real things that go on, you're like, well, that's totally amazing. So the flat earth people, I think, are missing out a lot by not, you know, trying to be rigorous or at least taking their logic further and further.
Now, they also don't want to spend the time to actually learn the real science. I mean, they don't either have the mental ability to do so, or they don't have the desire, or they don't bother to actually learn what they think they're debunking. I don't think any of us have ever met a flat earther that I would say, this person, I would go to them to help me, you know, on a test, math test or a physics test or anything of that nature. They have no concepts of even basic stuff.
I mean, the sad thing is the lack of inspiration.
Except for Debbie. Yeah, I'd go for Debbie for other reasons.
Yeah, lack of inspiration is hitting the nail on the head.
It's such a downer. It's like, I got this cool idea, flat earth. Awesome. But, you know, that's it. It's just something to argue with. But now I will observe, though, interestingly, in our universe, there are flat disk things, like the solar system, in a way, it has a
Christian disks outside black hole.
It started off as
the galaxy.
Yeah. Flattened.
So those are things that have a good spin on them. So if you get a good, so if you take a cloud of dust or whatever,
right?
Its tendency is to collapse in on itself and will eventually form a sphere. But if you give it a good spin, which happens a lot because you get like tidal forces and things, then it flattens out into a disk.
And then
eventually clusters further, and then we get planets from that. So the disk shape you see a lot in nature. Like you said, the solar system, vaguely speaking, is a disk. The Milky Way, vaguely speaking, is a disk, right? Accretion disks around a black hole, and so on.
Ripples on a pond.
So spinning can fix a lot of those problems for you. Yeah.
Right. So it'd be interesting to calculate... As Matt, you often say, when these things come up, you say, well, this would be a good project for a post-grad, extra credit. If the Earth is, the flat Earth did get formed because the Earth was created under very rapid spinning, you could actually figure out the diameter of the Earth based on how fast we would have to be spinning for this amount of mass to have created this
disk.
And that would tell you, we can look at the stars and see how fast we're spinning. It takes 24 hours to go around. And so you could then figure out what the diameter of the Earth has to be. And I think I would like to continue with the idea that there are these flat disks everywhere. Like that's absolutely, this is a fun kind of thing. We said, yes, you can have flat Earth. We got that. We're not exactly sure how it formed, but generations to come will figure out how this.
But Philip, then you run into another problem. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to do what if it's all, the planets are flat, but now these flat planets have to be facing us this way.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Right? It can't be edge on. And they do kind of tilt in their orbits, and we do actually see, you know, different sides of the planets. So how's that going to work?
True. Out? Yeah. Well, everything seems to be racing away from us too. Mm-hmm. So there are weird things there.
Right. But so we might just be on the lucky flat planet that we are kind of face on to a star, so we get, you know, good diurnal heating and such. But if you have bad luck and your flat planet is edge on to the sun or the nearest star, then you're not going to be very habitable, right?
And we don't see those because they're edge on.
Yeah.
So there's many, many more planets in the solar system we can't see, but they're just edge on. And they're dark, right?
And for some reason, always stay edge on to us.
Yeah, that gets a little weirder there.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Steve, wasn't there somebody that that said at one time that there was like this, I can't remember how you describe it, almost like syrup in space. It was like
the ether?
A gel.
Well, I mean, there was Lorentz ether that like Dell was trying to talk about. It's called frame dragging, but they actually have that in relativity too. But the ether was supposed to have been this medium that the light used to promulgate through, like sound waves through ocean, light waves would go through this ether. But they didn't really try to syrupy, but they said that I think the changes in ether, according to them, caused refraction That is why we can see things that are actually over the curve that normally we couldn't see because of refraction, but that's because of density differences in the ether, I think. I don't know. You need to get a professional flat earther here to sort that out.
I need to like look back and try to find that, because the way that he described it was that it was almost like syrup or honey out in space, that above the firmament, as he described it, because he was, you know, how they were saying the firmament keeps out the waters that are above. Well, it wasn't really waters. It was more like a syrup or a gel.
Water was in gel form?
Substance. Oh, cool. I can't remember the guy's.
A universe full of maple syrup? I'm down for that.
Yeah, something like that.
No, you're not Canadian. You're
Well, what about, how would the, what about that? Let me ask you guys that. How would that work? Because there are some flat earthers that think that there is a firmament, a dome, a glass. Actually, we had Steve, who was the guy that that said that the glass ceiling that Hillary spoke about?
Mad Mike Hughes,
aka Rocket Man. Yeah, Mad Mike Hughes said that Hillary Clinton made a slip up when at the convention said we're about to break through the glass ceiling.
She revealed.
Revealed the firmament. The Illuminati had to shut her down.
She had to lose.
They took her off stage and whipped her away.
Oh, that's fantastic.
In fact, the Hillary that came back may not have been the same Hillary.
Right. Or but that was it. And serious as a heart attack thinks that that's proof that there's a dome. But some of them actually do think that there is a dome that is above the planet.
Yeah, I should say there's a clear scriptural reference for that with the floods in the Hebrew Bible, that it's described as the heavens cracking open and the water coming through. So that makes sense.
COVID has the canopy theory, but they have this weird belief, and I still have not isolated it yet, but they seem to think that in order to have a pressure gradient of like the atmosphere, you have to have a container. Now, I took fluid theory and I took thermodynamics and I took physics, general physics. There's no theorem out there that's like that. There's no law. The closest thing is what's called Pascal's pressure law, but that's only if you do have a container. States that the pressure exerted on an enclosed fluid at rest will be transmitted equally and out throughout the fluid into the walls of this container. It's how hydraulics works.
But I can understand. I can understand the cognitive error, right? Because our everyday experience of gases, say, is that if they're not in an enclosed container, they dissipate. Right, they don't hang out and certainly don't create a pressure gradient. Right, whereas that everyday experience of working with gases doesn't translate very well to entire planets, shells of gas under the effect of gravity.
Big massive planets with gravity.
Yeah, and that's a mistake that happens a lot. I think, is that people have their everyday experience of, you know, flat floors and balls falling down and try to extrapolate that to planetary or cosmological scales. And it turns out that's a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of careful thought to extrapolate the flat floor in your basement to the Earth as a whole.
And it's also it's interesting because I still maintain a sense of, I still find it disturbing, although now in a fun way and different from when I was a kid. But I believed that the Earth was round when I was taught that. And then at some point realized, or I'm sure I saw a diagram that showed that people in Australia are facing the other way. I mean, right, that they're hanging.
They're hanging off of their life, yes.
Yeah, and in fact, I've always felt that if the Earth were clear, for instance, it would change. Like, it'd be amazing to actually be able to see this what it truly means to be living on a sphere.
You know? That would be cool, actually.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
Because I used to like you when I was little. I had a thought that I always try, and I remember asking several teachers this question, but I couldn't figure out how it works. Where if you dig a hole straight down and you just keep digging straight through, at what point are you tunneling up? You know, just dig straight down. At what point are you no longer digging down, but you're digging up out of the
I would say at the ground point. But it is an interesting thing. If you actually had a hole, obviously theoretically, because it couldn't happen, but if you had a hole that went from the entire planet from like the North Pole to South Pole and you jumped in, it would take 42 minutes and 12 seconds to get from the one pole to the other, and you'd come out whatever velocity you jumped in at, whatever initial velocity you jumped in, that's what you would come out at. You'd be like, go up, and then you would act, and that's, which is weird, because if you actually did a cord, like if you took the Earth and you had a cord, so you have the North Pole and you want to come out the equator, right, which would be like a 45 degree journey, right? Yeah. And you jumped in that hole, yeah, it would still take you 42 minutes and 12 seconds.
That's cool.
Because of the angle of distance, the way the angle shape and the way the gravity affects you, it still takes you the same amount of time.
And isn't it that you were, if you didn't do anything, if you just jumped in, that you would go all the way, almost all the way to the other edge, and then fall, you basically ping pong back and forth.
Well, yeah, but if you forever actually jumped in, you'd actually come out the other hole. You'd still exit it.
Right, and then you keep going to a certain point, and then you would fall back down again.
Right.
Yeah. How would you exit it, though? Would you, like, if you jumped in feet first, would you come out of the hole feet first? Like, up?
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, you would. And hopefully you have a friend there to grab you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that you'd be crushed by the time before you long got there to the center of the Earth, right, because of the temperatures and pressures, and you would come out.
Well, we're saying
as a human, but whatever.
A shield Elon Musk has built a capsule.
He designed something to
a submarine.
Now, but another interesting thing about that is, this is a mini what the if, that you'd be in free fall, the Earth would still be turning. So if
that's right, you'd get Coriolis forces.
Yeah,
that could get messy fast.
True. Yeah, you'd be thrown out more. You'd be thrown outward.
Yeah,
depending on what angle that hole was drilled.
That's fascinating.
So that's right. So it wouldn't, if you wanted to survive, you probably don't want a straight shot, but there's some curve that would account for the Coriolis forces just right. So it'd actually be sort of an S shape going through the Earth.
Yeah, you'd want to be in something.
It's so weird how all of that works out, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd be flushing the toilet in your capsule, and then all of a sudden it would go the other way. I mean, again, 4chan, you guys figure that out.
They have a scam on the and I just last year, matter of fact, I got in a big argument with a friend of mine because she went down to the equator, and they have this scam where they got on one side of the equator.
Oh yeah,
right. They have it spinning one way, and they go like 20 feet the other side, and it spins the other way. And she's like, "Oh, it's a demonstration of the Coriolis effect." I'm trying to explain to her that's a scam. It doesn't work that way. It's all plumbing, the way they spin it, but your plumbing determines which way it goes, because the Coriolis effect only affects larger scales, like hurricane-level stuff.
Hurricanes and things.
Her understanding of it was such that she witnessed it with her own eyes, even though I could explain to her why it wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. The dissonance was there, that her belief was all that mattered. Thought it had to exist, even though the physics doesn't allow for it, doesn't matter. And I was like, for the longest time, I was losing my mind. Because I was like, I went to school with this person. I'm like, you were very smart in high school. What the hell happened to you?
Actually, that reminds me. On the picture behind you, the flat Earth you've got there has some nice hurricane-type spirals.
Yeah, I like those. That's one of the reasons that attracted me to this.
And those form because of Coriolis forces. So that flat Earth has to be spinning in some way to get those formations. So there's something interesting going on.
Yeah, I like this. And then I increased some of the brightness and I changed some of the hues from the original image. Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting that it has an atmosphere that is also
square.
Yeah, if you actually, it does, I don't know if there's an atmosphere, but right, like, here,
jello.
Is it jello or firmament?
Can it be jello? Can it be jello? There's a guy that has a video, forget the channel off the top of my head, but I wanted to run this by you guys and tell me what you think about this. Now, the reason that he gives that the Earth is not spinning is because he said that if, let's say you wanted to go to the Caribbean, all right, you could essentially get in a helicopter, go about 10 feet off the ground, and just wait for the Caribbean to rotate to your position.
Yeah.
Yep, that's an argument that goes back again to the Greeks. You can find texts 2,500 years old that argue
you
that
jumped up. Why don't you land? You know, a mile down the way. You know,
although if you jump up high enough, that does happen, right?
Well, yeah, once you get outside of the atmosphere, but the atmosphere is being dragged along with the Earth, and flat earthers don't understand the concept of drag. One of many concepts they don't seem to get.
Yeah, you need, once you get a modern sense of inertia in the Newtonian sense, then the helicopter Caribbean experiment doesn't work anymore.
We found out that Newtonian physics doesn't work according to, was it Wanton? Relativity disproved Newtonian physics. He doesn't quite understand that it incorporates Newtonian physics. It explains Newtonian physics. It just adds more to it. But according to Wanton, our resident expert on these topics, Newtonian physics is good to know.
All right, there we go.
I think the guy gets an A for creativity, because I thought watching that this was such a creative explanation for why the Earth spins. Because I mean, if you think about it, just in a simple sense. It would be kind of cool to get
that argument goes back a long way.
To come to you.
Yeah, I mean that's been around for a very long time. That argument, if we're spinning, if I jumped up, I don't land somewhere else, or if I just
like
you said in a helicopter.
Helicopter. Creativity, definitely.
What is the weather on a flat Earth?
Well, that's an interesting question. So the dominant force that drives the weather on our planet is the fact that the equator generally is warmer than the poles. So the hot air pushes out from the equator towards the poles, and then because the Earth spins, the Coriolis forces takes that outward push and gives it a twist. So like if you look at a map of the dominant winds all around the Earth, you can see that spiral pattern very closely, right? So let's see. So on a flat Earth, let's assume that the sun goes around it, or through it in the way we were talking before. Right. So you've got a hot side and a cold side.
Yes.
So you'd get winds going from the hot side to the cold side, the day side to the night side.
Around the edges and through the sun hole. There may be other holes, by the way, too. Why is there just a sun hole? There's got to be a moon hole. And
yeah, that's right. So we talked about that would mess with
too. A lot of holes. So that's going to...
The Swiss cheese flat Earth model.
Yeah.
Yes.
So dominant winds would be from the center of the day side towards the edges. And then if it was spinning, then maybe you'd get those same Coriolis forces and you could get some cool hurricanes forming in the center and moving out. That'd be fun.
At the corners.
Yeah.
What the hell is the wind? I mean, not only are you, it seems like you'd be in danger of falling off the Earth, but you wouldn't. But you would definitely be knocked down by
the winds. Would be crazy.
Right, yeah.
The trees are tilted. The wind is how.
The winds be blowing. I don't.
That's a scary place.
Around the corner.
Scary place.
Yeah.
That's a scary place.
Yeah, that's right. It would be a little terrifying.
Well, if they
would be the center? Like, what would be the center place?
Well, I got to hang up with this wind thing, because where would the air become? Like, you would be, if you were standing on the end, you would almost have to have like a low pressure suit, like a space suit. Because
that's a good question. Yeah, like, is the atmosphere thick?
It would be
That's a good question.
Yeah, if it's rarefied, then you wouldn't have much, obviously, wind.
It would have to be rarefied because it'd be like altitude because gravity is the other direction.
Which means, though, that means it's much thicker in the middle, though.
Yeah, that's right. But I should say that's a relatively straightforward calculation. I think, like as Philip says, I always say, that's a good master's thesis for a physics student. Right, figure out the different distributions of atmosphere on a flat Earth. Totally doable. I'll bet you're right that it's going
to
be.
Well, you'd also have to take into account geological features, though. Too, they're going to affect wind
pattern. Yeah, they'll screw with things too. Yeah.
Wait, would mountains go sideways too? On the edge?
So mountains is a hard question.
Yeah.
And actually, again, speaks to if you notice the one behind Steve there has a volcano on it.
Right. Yeah, where's the lava?
So that suggests it has tectonic plates.
Yeah, like it would all build up at those weird vectors at the end.
Yeah, what's the geology?
But how is tectonic plates going to work when you have the same gravitational force on them, moving them toward the middle, right? Because
that's going to be pretty weird.
Gravity is going to be angled such that the further out you go, the more gravitational force you have pointing toward the center, which in this case would be like right in the middle here. So how would plate tectonics work in that? Would be these mountains would be like, I don't even know how that would work.
Yeah, exactly. You might not get mountains.
It's almost like it's tending to form a sphere.
Well, in fact, if we went back to the idea that it had to be formed under massive spinning forces, huge centrifugal force that created this disc shape wouldn't. Then the edge might be full of giant spikes.
But then at the edge, like the problem is if you had the spin to counteract it and down was towards the plate, then the winds at the edge, I don't know. It'd be like a windfall. It would be cold.
Volcanoes that were erupting and the lava going like outward, like, you know, sideways. So you have these sideways volcanoes.
Yeah, would sure. If they're along like the
fire because it's spinning.
Like along the edge of the coin. That would be a pretty cool image. Yeah, it's spinning flat earth, spewing lava out from the edges.
And that works. As it spews lava over the edge, that's when you start forming the continents because it flattens out.
That's pretty metal, I gotta say. Yeah.
I think we've got it.
We got a better model than Jaronism's ass.
Yeah. The big spinning fire ring of sideways trees or
Swiss cheese model. You gotta have
Swiss cheese model.
Yeah.
With sun holes and moon holes, and this is a far out planet, man, I'm telling you.
And I love the idea of the spikes on the spokes on the end. That it's not a simple coin. It'd be all these, like, you know, it's like a
be like dendrites it's like at a, the edge.
Yeah,
it's like when you drop something on the ground and it's creates, you know, a splash pattern. That's what this Earth might.
I like it.
Flat Earth might look like on the edges. Yeah,
I like
it. The moon would be actually what it is, which is a droplet that got, you know, pulled out.
Yeah, solidified.
So it works. It works.
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, however, if we have this model, wouldn't the stars just be going around like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't quite figured out that.
That's another problem we have to work on maybe another time. But yeah, the stars would never go like below the horizon. You look up, you just see them going around like that.
Yeah. Well, the other question is maybe the sky is not a firmament, not like a dome. It's also a flat disk that has some kind of weird optical illusion. It's like a ceiling. You know,
I got it.
So that appears
came up with a better model than any flat earther has.
I guess if it's
in,
a three
in 15 minutes dome, here.
Exactly. Could it be instead of having like a dome just over us? Could it be like a 3D Dyson sphere around us? And you know the pinpoints of light in this Dyson sphere is collecting energy for God or something. It's kind of rotating around us or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of possibilities. You know, one of the suggestions for this is that it's not actually that the stars rise, and this is a very old claim, that the stars don't rise and set, but they're actually annihilated as they hit the horizon every day, and then they're reformed the next morning.
You know, it's funny, you mocked that, but I actually have a photo of a NASA truck taking the sun as it's going down, and the truck's underneath it, ready to catch it, to haul it away.
Oh, that's a great picture,
yeah.
I love that photo.
It's my favorite. I wonder, instantly my mind went to, there has to be at least one person who will buy this. Like, even though it's a meme, one person will look at this and say, oh, that's absolutely what they're doing.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the CG, you know, animation. Also, another possibility for the sun is that it going along with that idea that the stars might disappear. It could be that it's not the sun hole is not a thing where the sun goes down and then goes around the other side and comes up back the other way. It could be that there's two volcanoes. And every morning, you know, this huge glob of gas. It's like Old Faithful in Yellowstone.
Spits it out.
Spits out this huge thing and throws it up in the air. And basically, it's like playing catch.
Like a lava lamp.
Volcano.
Like those fountains at Walt Disney World. They're all timed.
That's right. That's what it is.
Wasn't that similar like the Chinese believe that a dragon ate the sun every morning and then it was birthed anew?
Yeah.
Ooh, there's our ice dragon from
the ice dragon's doing it.
Are we inventing religion too on this episode?
Hey, you know what? 1,000 years from now, there might be another.
Why not? I'm so jealous of the concept that you guys came up with. That's such a cool idea.
What
you guys
what do thing
about?
I've kind of got jealousy on it as well, or envy.
Yeah. about applying yourselves inside of, you know, these type of ideas, I think is fascinating. Because
it's like a brilliant exegesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So,
well, come join us anytime.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, do you guys mind if we have any questions from the audience, asking a couple of those?
Yeah, we got questions. Great. We got some super chats. Let me do the super chats because there's a couple questions in there. Okay.
Okay.
Let's see here. Let's get the right thing here. Ghostly Enigma, let us now pull back from the foreskin of ignorance and apply the wire brush of reality. Wow.
Ouch.
Painful, but effective.
Yep.
Howsoy, I just wish the earth was hollow, so then we could drill a hole and just float weightlessly inside just for the fun of it.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah,
that would be fun. We need to get Howsoy on more often. He's a brilliant flat earth debunker. J.R. Prone, I just got out of the Navy, and I worked with a guy on deployment who was a flat earther. I didn't know it was a thing, and I thought he was trolling me. Yeah, I would have too. I would have thought that somebody was trolling me.
In a way, he is.
It is a great troll. Yeah,
well, it is. That's why I got into this whole community, because I had a friend who just kind of fell into flat earth thing. I was like, are you serious? Like,
so he really,
like, I've known this guy for 23 years. And he springs this crap on me, and I'm like, you have a telescope. You've taken pictures of the moon.
Yeah.
You've looked at stars and planets.
Maybe somebody snaps with people. I don't know.
It's cool kids.
If I have a snap like that, just put me down. Just put me down. Get me out of my misery. I don't want to continue.
No, Steve, because our ratings will go through the roof. And it will be so much fun to watch.
You know what? Replace me with CGI. Nobody's going to give a fuck. And, all right. And, these are the next two questions. These are actually questions.
You know, by the way, Art Bell, I think, you know, Art Bell. Who,
bless his soul.
Right. I think he kind of went, you know, he started to see UFOs and stuff.
You know what? I got to tell you, big Art fan from early days, especially I listened to him on like KFI, I think it was, with my little crystal radio that I would build.
Oh, nice.
You know, I think that you're right. I think that I saw a change in him toward the end. Mm-hmm. That's a topic. That's a whole new show, I think, with George Norrie and Art Bell. And I think we could actually build a show just around that very concept.
Yeah.
It's hard to hear that kind of thing over and over. And that's what I fear for you and for us.
Yeah,
it's. I think it's sometimes when you're in the middle of something, like, and you're hearing it every day. Some people are susceptible to starting to go, well, wait a minute, okay, this guy has a little bit of a point here, and then you go on some time, and then another person will come on, and you go, well, wait, that's a good point.
Well, you know, but I think as people that are skeptical or skeptics or whatever the things you want to define yourself in the skeptic community, when we hear something, you know, it's outrageous. An actual skeptic should just go, okay, you know what. Let me quickly analyze that. Oh yes, that's bullshit. But lots of things I've already heard of before. But there are some things that you hear and you go, okay, you know what? It's a good argument. It's bad, but it's actually something I have to think about to debunk. And let me show you why it's wrong and spend some time debunking it. I think that actually is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You know?
It's a good bad argument.
Yeah, it's a good exercise.
I like good bad arguments because those are ones that make you think.
Yeah, I often have my students work through things they know are wrong. They say, what would the logical argument for this thing be? And then dismantle it, right? But you got to do the initial work of figuring out why someone would think that in the first place.
I think that's great, yeah. Okay, so Matt, I'm going to give you the first question, and then Philip, I'll give you the second one.
Sure.
All right, Matt, can flat earthers explain rainbows being curved? So how would a rainbow work in something like this?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. So rainbows are curved actually not because of the curvature of the earth.
It's the Lord's covenant with
it. But because water droplets are round, rainbows are essentially light that's bounced around inside a whole bunch of water droplets. And then your eye is catching the edge of some of that refracted light. So you can totally have a rainbow on a flat earth. It might raise some uncomfortable questions for a flat earther, but there's no problem with the physics.
So where would the pot of gold be?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the sun hole.
Yeah, on the other side of the sun hole.
Jump in the sun hole, you'll find it.
The problem with it is, like, if you look at a rainbow from the air, it's actually a circle. It's not a bow at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of does lend to the question, though. The covenant, like you said, if I remember correctly, the rainbow was God's covenant never to flood the earth again. However, there are many people that believe in the Bible that don't accept younger creation or anything like that. So does that covenant get thrown out of the way too? So God never said that?
Oh, that'd be a bummer.
Yeah, I've yet to have somebody explain that one to me. If they don't believe that the flood ever happened, which of course it never did, then why did God make a covenant for something that never happened? But anyways, digress. Okay, so Philip, this question is for you.
Yes, sir.
How do flat earthers explain the change in daylight hours from season to season?
That's so funny. I was going to ask a question about
that. You were going to ask that same question, weren't you?
So, yeah, the season. Well, I was wondering, what do you do with the seasons? Well, I would think that we have to say that actually the seasons themselves are caused by a bizarre thing that's even now still hard for my mind to wrap itself around. But the idea that the Earth stays in the same position in space as it goes around the sun. So like a gyroscope. Anyway, it's hard to imagine, right? So the flat Earth could still be doing that, you know, that whatever the orientation is, although it couldn't maintain perfect stationary orientation in space like the Earth does, because that would mean, well,
I don't see how it would work at all.
You would get, just like at the North Pole, or just like at the North Pole or the South Pole, you get 6 months of darkness. I think wind up with something like that, like 2 years.
You have a couple different things going on, though. So see if we can work with this. Here's your sphere, the Earth. Mm-hmm. Now, we're tilted at 23.5 degrees. So that axis, like you said, that does change. So just like a sky gyroscope, we're always going to have a velocity, angle of velocity going around that line. Right. So when we're on the other side of the sun, right, when we're transitioning around the sun, the Earth will always stay at that angle, rotating around that. But we also have the fact that during summer, we're further away from the sun, and winter, we're closer. So now we have this weird thing that you have to explain on a flat Earth, by which we're closer to the sun, we're further away from the sun, we're hotter during the summer, even though we're further away from the sun, but our directionality is facing more onward, face on to the sun. Yeah. I don't see how it's going to work.
I got to say that from a sci-fi world building point of view, whatever the sun would do on that planet would be really cool.
Yep.
And like fall? Autumn, you would have the sun edge on for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. As you do in the Arctic, for instance, but you get, if the Earth is truly flat, I mean, the shadows would be.
Does it glow from the edge or just the face? Does it emit light from the edges?
Oh, definitely. You know, Antonio Subrat's answered that question about the seasons, Steve, if you remember. There were three suns in the beginning. And
do you know where I think they have got that from?
Three.
Where?
Well, because. The sun is a fourth generational star, and so there was three generations prior to that. And I think he's thinking somehow that means there was three stars prior or something. I don't know.
His explanation was that there were three suns that spun around the planet, and once something happened with God or something like that, where he forced the suns to come together as one, so the sun now is actually three suns. But that as it spins from the center, that's the seasons. So it spins from the center outward like this to the outsides of the Earth, and then so you get the seasons. As the sun moves across the disk, it's getting further away from this side, so you are in winter. And as it comes back to the starting point,
how's that different from daytime nighttime?
Oh, I'm just saying the sun and the moon spin like this.
The daytime nighttime, it gets further away from you too, right?
Yeah. Steve, I'm just repeating what Antonio said, and you know, I'm thinking he has some credibility here.
These theories take, you know, it's complicated. It takes time to learn.
And my mind can't understand. So I'm glad you guys are here to help me out, because
yeah.
I have some limitations in my ability to think like a flat earther.
Maybe there's two big volcanoes in that hole we were talking about earlier.
Sure.
More of a slot.
Yeah, I should say, I mean, you could, I have no doubt that you could write down an equation of motion for the sun that would duplicate things like the seasons.
But it requires because
that's
more
essentially like the old geocentric models of the solar system could replicate all of these things perfectly well. They could predict when you know, the solstice was and so on. Mm-hmm. You just take whatever motion that we would attribute to the Earth, like the spin, and attribute it to some celestial body instead, like the firmament or the sun. So with sufficient mathematical cleverness, you can make that work.
Here's an idea. By the way, from the fourth dimension, from a higher dimension, is the spherical Earth, does it appear flat?
We would be a third-dimensional hypersurface of a fourth-dimensional hypersurface.
So,
right.
So it's flat in a metaphorical sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd look like lines on a sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's a fourth-dimensional hypercube, like this, for example, would be a three-dimensional cross-section of a fourth-dimensional hypercube, would it not be?
It would look like a drawing, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's what's going
on. Go read Flatland. Great book.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, the movie Dark City, also, without a spoiler, I'll just say, if you see the movie Dark City, there is a kind of cool visuals that happen. Have any of you seen it?
I haven't, but I have. Want to.
Check it out. It's a great
movie. Fantastic.
Great
it's movie. Fantastic.
Weird.
But I want to thank both of you for coming on. This was fascinating. Awesome. I mean, I loved every second of this. We would love to have you guys come back on and do... I would love to have you come back on and actually do simulation theory.
Sure. You can do that.
Yeah.
That's something me and Steve have been talking about looking into and exploring a little bit further. So that would be awesome.
Cool. Yeah, we actually we passed
a fairly recent one.
Yeah, in fact, part two, we did a two-part simulation, What the If, and the second episode literally just went up yesterday.
Excellent.
So happens to be, yeah, check those out. Yeah.
We'll do that. So I'm going to let you guys make any closing statements you want. Obviously, let everybody know where they can go and find out more about you guys and listen to your podcast. Guys, make sure that you check out their podcast. The link is in the description, and it is fantastic. So definitely go out and listen to these guys and rate them on iTunes. Give them those 5 stars and leave the comments. But we'll turn it over to you guys to close us out.
Well, thank you. I mean, and right back at you. This has been a total blast. Totally flew by, and psyched to have discovered your show. And likewise, if any of our hopefully some of our audience came here, and this is the first time you're seeing this show too, absolutely subscribe on YouTube and check out your guys' Patreon, which I'm sure you'll mention later. So, What the If? Our website is whattheif.com. Where you can. Link. You can listen to all of our episodes. We're up to 50-ish episodes, and there's a little bit of biography stuff about me and Matt. And you can contact us there and all that stuff too. We have a very vibrant Twitter community, which I'm psyched about. On Twitter, we are at What the If Show, all one word, and follow us there and chime in. We do have a fun thing we do, by the way. We are always open to people throwing ideas at us, and we can run with them. So if anybody suggests ideas, and if we pick up any of those ideas and we run with them, as we often have, take fan ideas, you are called a super iffer, and we will, in gratitude, as by the way, I'm going to do to both of you guys, we in gratitude will send you finger puppets from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild. So Carl Sagan, finger puppet, Einstein, Galileo. We have, and there's some science fiction characters, Spock and Scotty and different things.
Right? The Unemployed Philosophers Guild?
Yeah. You actually probably know who they are without knowing it.
You've seen their stuff, I'll bet.
Probably.
They make smart, their motto is they make smart.
Is that a slide against philosophers not being able to actually get a real job once they graduate?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. Well, my friends who run it, we're it.
Yeah.
So philosophersguild.com is their website.
I love that.
That's brilliant.
Check out their gifts. Yeah, they're great.
Excellent.
Matt, and Matt is at NYU, and you should go there and take his class.
Yes. Yeah, Matt?
But yeah, if you want us to change some aspect of the universe for you, drop us a line.
They'll make it happen.
Yeah. Excellent.
You know what? Flat earthers, go to them if you actually want to model, or anybody else. You know, model something, they'll make it for you.
Well, Ed, I would be interested to know what you guys think about tomorrow, the show that we're having tomorrow, because we are going to have two people come on to present a model of a flat earth, one that they've been working on and claim can still stand. So
okay, cool.
It's going to be
Legos, or
I hope so. That'd be awesome.
Brownies, gingerbread house.
No, it's going to be a must see thing because I have my instincts telling me it's going to be the worst of the worst possible bullshit.
So if you guys are listening, Limitless Channel, Awake Souls, we want pictures.
Yeah, and a bonus points if you take what you've heard from us tonight and sketch it out so we can see the big volcano ring of fire, sideways trees.
Wow.
Model.
Swiss cheese.
I'd actually be okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be awesome. I'm expecting Nathan Oakley or Sleeping Warrior or even Darrenism to run with something we said. Come on, we gave you guys some really good ideas.
I would love to see images of the brave people. There's going to be a sport at the Sun Hole. People who try to be the last out of the Sun Hole before the sun
comes diving. In. Come on, it's a thing.
That's excellent. Yeah,
exactly.
Jump
Get
it
out like before the sun want. Comes up. Get out, you're going to die. Yeah,
that's right. Three Race sports. The sun.
Yeah. That's Fox will probably pick that up. To come after yeah. Survivor,
yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be a good thing.
This
went by fast. I'm not even kidding.
It went by really quick. I'm gonna change the thumbnail for tonight too. I'm gonna actually draw out this Earth that we came up with and see what it looks like.
By the way, your illustrations are
those are really great.
I gotta say, from a film or a visual person point of view, that your graphics are like fantastic.
Thank you. I always tell people this when they bring them up, that each graphic has an Easter egg in it. When Steve and I first started doing this, I took an image of something that was very important to me, and I cut it into 270 pieces. And that was the trajectory that I hope we get. I hope we get to that 270 mark. But each graphic has a piece of that in it. So cool. The running thing is if you are able to piece together whatever that image is, then you will be a permanent co-host on the show. If anybody can figure that out, we will bring you along permanently. So
it's like the Infinity Stones, what do they call it?
Yeah. Kind of like that. But I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you both once again for coming on here. This has been fantastic. We would love to have you guys back to talk about simulation theory soon.
Yeah.
And guys, go check them out. You will not be disappointed. I promise you. Mm-hmm. And with that, we will say goodnight and see you back here tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern. It's not 8 o'clock. It's being pushed back an hour, and we will have Red's Rhetoric, Godless Engineer, Awake Souls, and the Limitless Channel to see about their model of the flat Earth.
All right. Thanks for having us, guys.
Absolutely.
Good night. This was awesome.